Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. Two for one, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow, line dance song.
Hey, Sun Guy Nation, Sun Guy QT with you here as usual on a Friday afternoon. Real quick before we get into the interview, some show notes if you're looking for wrestling in the next couple of days. Tonight, WCWO in Indianapolis, Indiana, like usual. 3-2-1 battle here in our neck of the woods in Seattle. APW in Daly City, California. VIPW in Vancouver, BC. NCW in Cornell, Georgia. WTF in Carmel, Indiana. NSCW in Franklin, Kentucky. And PWE in Oshawa, Ontario. Tomorrow night, 3-2-1 returning for the all-female tournament in Seattle. VIPW in Nanaimo, BC. BTW in Salinas, California. Rocky Mountain Pro in Golden, Colorado. WXW in Mineola, Florida. 3XW in Des Moines, Iowa. WWA in Owensboro, Kentucky. PWT in Carmel, Maine. EPW in Ham Lake, Minnesota. TCW in Kyling, Texas. APW in Irwin, Tennessee. OCW in Akron, Ohio. And ICW happening in Woodside, New York tomorrow. Without further ado, I would like to welcome our guest this week. He is Wes Adams. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you all for having me today.
Since today is your first time with us, we're going to get started with the traditional first-timers question. What led to you getting into the business of professional wrestling?
It was just something that I always wanted to do. I think when I was 4 years old, I was acting up, and my uncle plopped me down in front of the TV and popped the tape in the VCR and said, watch this and shut up. And the match just happened to be, it was an AWA home video. And I was so young, but I still specifically remember to this day, the very first match I ever saw was Rick Martel versus Jumbo Tsuruta from the home video AWA series. And it's just, I don't know, from the very first day I watched wrestling, just something clicked, said, that is something that I have to do. Not that I want to do, I have to do. And just everything from that point forward was just, you know, geared towards, you know, getting into the business.
Now, when you first start watching wrestling, like you said, you were young. What point in your life did it click that you wanted to do this as a profession?
From day one. Day one, first time I saw wrestling, that was it. I had to do it. You know, I didn't want to do anything else. I played baseball for a while, and there were a few years where baseball and wrestling were neck and neck, but that was it. I did not want to do anything else. I still don't want to do anything else, even though I am.
Now, you eventually made your way to the largest company in the world, WWE. Obviously, that is where people are going to make the most as far as being able to have a full-time living in the wrestling industry, especially during the years that you were there. Was WWE the promotion that was always on your radar as the ultimate goal, or did you have goals other than WWE that would have been personally more gratifying to you?
Well, not really. My main two goals, especially as I got older and really started, I guess when I started going to college and, you know, I really started looking at it as a business and not just I have to be a wrestler, but I started looking at it as a business. How is this going to be a career option? How am I going to make a living doing this? WWE was always on the radar because, you know, as I got older, when I got into the business, I picked a really, really bad week or bad month, rather, to have my first match. My first official match was March 2001. And as we all know, March 2001 is the same month that WWE bought WCW and ECW. My goal previously, you know, when I really started looking at it as a career option, was to try to get on one of the three major organizations. But by the time I started, there was only one organization, and that was the goal, was to either be in WWE or eventually, after gaining some experience, start promoting my own shows for a living.
Now, in your career, you've not only refereed, you've wrestled, did several different jobs within the industry, as a matter of fact. Do you think that having the biggest chance of success comes with being able to do the most roles within the industry?
Absolutely. That was one thing that I was never married to just being a wrestler. That was not, I didn't have that kind of tunnel vision. I wanted to be involved in the business. Of course, I did. You know, wrestling was the priority for a while, but I wanted to learn how to referee. I wanted to learn how to book, promote, run dressing rooms, ring announce, security, whatever it is. You know, learn how to do everything. And especially, you know, getting older, you know, can't have as, you know, many matches as I used to, but, you know, I can still referee, I can still ring announce, I can manage, you know, run a dressing room, book a show. You know, there's plenty to do. There's tons of wrestlers out there. I think, you know, there's a lot of good talent out there. And, you know, as I get older, to me, having matches isn't as important for me personally.
One of the aspects of professional wrestling that has always been there, always will be there, is eventually you're going to get hurt. If you're in there for any length of time, injuries are just part of the business. I know you had to have been there at some point when maybe not necessarily you yourself were injured, but somebody in a match was injured on a show you were doing. What's some of the more serious injuries that you've witnessed in the ring?
Well, I've seen more, you know, more cuts and stitches than I can even just bear to imagine. But a couple of, like, you know, major injuries. One thing that really stands out that I remember was back in 2008 during a dark match for WWE, Jimmy Yang and Shannon Moore were competing in a dark match against Brian Cage, who's in, you know, Lucha Underground or what, or Impact Wrestling. I'm not sure which one at the moment. He had a dark match and a tag match, and he got one of the worst concussions. I think Jimmy came off the top rope with a cross body, and he hit his head so hard, and he was supposed to get up and bump and feed, and he couldn't even get up. He was just on such another planet. Like, I immediately threw up the X sign and stopped the match and covered him up because he was just out of it. And that was just really, I've never, you know, being around wrestling, we've all seen concussions, but, you know, we've also, most of them, we've seen somebody just kind of shake it off and keep going. You know, you get your bell rung, you see the blue star, see the birdies, but you just shake it off. And I know he can shake it off, but in that particular instance, he just was on another planet. And he wasn't able to get up, so we stopped the match. And that will always, I'll never forget that.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT is with us, and I'm sure QT has questions, so I'm going to pass things over to him for a bit.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Sun Guy. Hello, Wes.
Hey, KG, how you doing?
Hey, pretty good. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Sometimes a little bit of audio problems crop up, but I have to get away from the computer. Okay. Well, Wes, to your knowledge, did the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, ever play football for the Mean Green or University of North Texas?
I don't know.
I only ask that question because I've heard rumors that with about a year ago, you attended a football game and wrestling match at the University of North Texas.
But well, that was actually this year. That was September 1st. That was just a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Jerry Bostic, out of Texas, he has a promotion called World Class Revolution Wrestling. They promote shows all over Texas and Oklahoma. They bring in some really big names, draw some really big crowds. Back on September the 1st, as part of the North Texas football game against SMU Mustangs, there was a world-class reunion. It was the night of the Von Erichs. Kevin Von Erich was there, his daughters, Carrie's daughter, Lacey Von Erich, and then Ross and Marshall came in, and they did wrestling on the football field after the game. And they had a lot of big names. Hacksaw Duggan was there, Jack Swagger, Kid Cash, Tatanka, some great independent talent that I had not been exposed to before. Matt Stryker was the host. And I never did hear anybody mention Dusty's name. I'm not saying he didn't play there, but that night was mostly about the Von Erichs. And I was there. I was brought in by the college to kind of help them with the wrestling. My cousin Jamie works in the athletic department for North Texas, and he pitched my name to him to come in and help them. And so I kind of worked as a liaison between them and the wrestling promotion to kind of help things go smoothly.
Oh, okay. Now you said that your cousin Vinny?
Jamie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe he'll know if Dusty Rhodes wrestled for North Texas. I mean, played football for North Texas. You should ask him.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Wes, back in grade school, I put some Connie Hawkins, Willis Reed, Wilt Chamberlain, Lou Alcindor, Pistol Pete Maravich, and Bill Russell basketball cards in my bicycle spokes.
How dare you?
How much would they now be in mint condition? I got them out of Bazooka bubblegum packages for back then about 20 cents a pack.
No, I really don't know. Basketball is not particularly my specialty, but I can tell you without hesitation, in the thousands of dollars.
Oh, boy. Well, they would have paid for that bicycle that I was riding. Oh my gosh. Yeah, Lou Alcindor, that was his rookie card for the Milwaukee Bucks even before he changed his name.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That card would probably be your retirement fund if you had it in mint condition now.
Yes. Now, can you tell both Sign Guy and myself about your extensive card collection? Rumor has that it's upwards toward 500,000 cards.
I'm creeping up towards the million mark. I've been a sports card collector and part-time dealer since I was in really junior high school. My dad and I would go to trade shows together, and I would try to organize my collection and sell. And I kind of bought and sold over the years. But the past couple years, my collection's really blown up. Probably at this point, I'm getting close to 1 million. I'm not quite sure. Got to be 700,000, 800,000 at least. because I do usually buy in bulk, and then I sell, you know, when I'm not wrestling, I'll sell cards at flea markets or trade shows and stuff like that. But, yeah, I have a pretty large collection.
Now, have you heard about the guy that has cornered the market on the Mike Trout refractor cards, and he has pretty much, I think he has 4 red refractors, several orange refractors, and I think only 2 of the super refractors of Mike Trout that are autographed?
Is that, that's the guy from Las Vegas, right?
Yes.
Is that the guy from Mike? Well, up until a couple of weeks ago, I was a member of several card groups, buy, sell, trade, and just sports card discussion groups. And I would read a lot about somebody that bought a lot of the Mike Trouts. And I'm assuming it's the same guy. I want to say he was from Las Vegas, but I eliminated myself from a lot of groups last week just to kind of clear up my Facebook feed. So I haven't kept up with it here in the last couple weeks or so.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, when you get time, I think he may be on YouTube. Just plug in Person Corners the Mike Trout Market. I think you'll be able to get some information on that. Yes.
Okay.
All right. Okay, well, Wes, do you coach at your junior high school, North Gulfport Middle School? Are you a coach on the wrestling team?
No, wrestling, we don't have wrestling in Mississippi. As far as I'm aware, there's no amateur wrestling programs in Mississippi. So as right now, I currently do not coach. I've kind of thrown my name out for baseball or softball, but, you know, I kind of also at the same time, that takes a lot of time, going all the practices, the games. And I kind of like my me time, like my time with my wife, my time with our animals and our flea markets and, you know, when we do wrestling. And a lot, you know, you play baseball and, you know, baseball season from, you know, you start practicing in January and it's not over until end of April or even early May. So that's 4 or 5 months out of your year is gone, you know, and that's just not really something – at this point that I'm, you know, willing to do.
Yes, I think you got a new dog in the family, didn't you?
Yes. Well, the dog, we didn't get the dog. The dog got us is kind of what happened.
Oh. All right.
He showed up. He was a stray. He showed up at our house. We wanted to build the house and moved in. 1st of July, we're kind of out in a new phase of our subdivision, so we don't really have many neighbors just yet. But this little guy, this little wide-haired terrier, showed up, and my wife fed him, and then, of course, he didn't leave, and we just decided to keep him and took him in and went and got his shots and got him microchipped and made it official, so...
Wow, very nice. Okay. All right. Well, Wes, at what college did you get your teaching degree?
My teaching credentials I actually got from William Carey University in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. My original degree is in business, and I achieved that from University of Southern Mississippi in furniture retailing and restaurant management for a while when I wasn't wrestling full-time. And then just one day I just decided to go back and get my teaching license and start teaching school. And that's what I've been doing for the past 6 years.
Wow, very nice. Okay. When you were pursuing your teaching degree, what was your minor?
I didn't have a minor. I actually took a different program. My degree, again, was in business management. And in Mississippi, if you have a bachelor's degree, they have a program that a person with a bachelor's degree can go and become a certified teacher by taking a test and measurement class, taking a classroom management class, and then taking a couple of the practice exams, and then getting hired on by a school
and then do an internship program. So I enrolled in the alternate, it's called the Alternate Route for Educators program at William Carey University. So I went and enrolled in that in 2012, and that's how I earned my teaching credentials.
Wow, okay, all right. Well, Wes, when you were at that World Class Revolution event, did you get to meet Lacey Von Erich and have a chance to talk with her? And did you get a chance to meet Jim Ross?
Well, Jim Ross actually did not show up. He was advertised, and I was told that Jim Ross was the one that kind of got the ball rolling, setting up the whole thing. But Jim Ross was at All In that night. With Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks from Chicago. So Jim Ross wasn't at the event, which that was kind of a disappointment. I was looking forward to seeing him. Didn't talk to Lacey Von Erich. Really, I didn't even get a chance to talk to Kevin. I did talk to Ross and Marshall for a little bit. But Lacey and I were in FCW together for her short spell there. And I didn't even really get a chance to talk to her about that and see, because everybody was really busy that day. So we didn't get to talk a whole lot, but in FCW at the same time.
Okay. All right. Well, Wes, as event promoter for Power Slam Productions, do you have an event coming up on December 1st called Winter Warfare?
Winter Warfare, we sure do. December 1st at Gulfport, Mississippi VFW. It is a fundraiser for the Veterans Foreign Wars post 45-23. We've done a fundraiser for them last year, and it went very well. We just ran a show down here in Gulfport August the 1st, and this is kind of our follow-up event. So, yep, we'll definitely be there on December the 1st.
Wow, Will. And now, speaking of Veterans of Foreign Wars, I was stationed in the Coast Guard right around 2004, late 2004, 2005, 2006, on Lake Pontchartrain for the Coast Guard. And I got to do some temporary duty at the Coast Guard station in Gulfport before Katrina hit.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, it was a very beautiful area there, Gulfport. Mm-hmm. I was impressed.
It is.
Yes. Oh, okay. Well, Wes, at that event, Winter Warfare, will they be serving up a dish called Frito Pie for $2? And can you get extra cheese and hot sauce on this Frito Pie for $1 extra?
I don't know about the Frito Pie yet. I haven't made the menu for the concession stand just yet, but I will take that under consideration.
For our people out here in the Northwest that might not know what Frito Pie is, can you give us a brief description?
Oh, Frito Pie. Dump a bag of Fritos into a tray, dump you some chili over those Fritos, get you some shredded cheese, and there you go. That's it. Watch your underwear size expand.
Oh, okay.
It is very addictive.
Wow.
No, not
okay.
That way. I mean, it makes you fat. It's not healthy. I didn't mean that way. My bad. Sorry, I should have thought that one through before I said that.
All right. Well, Wes, do you see a subtle difference between the people who attend wrestling events in Mississippi and the fans that attend wrestling events in, say, central or northern Georgia? Do you see any differences?
It's been a long time. It's been 8 years since I've done anything in Georgia. But really not right off the top of my head do I think of anything different, majorly different, between the two. I do know that down here, the crowds are a lot more emotionally invested in the story of the match. I try to tell this to the talent that I book and other wrestlers around here. A lot of times it falls on deaf ears, but down here in the South, the heart of the story is real
babyface with an issue. You know, I always said that if I ever met Bill Watts in person, I would apologize to him for what some of these quote-unquote promoters have done to him. Some of the wrestling is really, really bad. But there's some that's pretty good. Not just I'm trying to, but there's too many people trying to emulate what they see in WWE. They're trying to get Cody Rhodes and Young Bucks and Kenny Omega because they're a New Japan fan. They're trying to do the latest thing that Ring of Honor is doing. They're trying to just kind of rip that off. And down here in the South, it's so simple. You know, Watts had it right for so many years. Good guy, bad guy, story, wrestles, that's it. And just so many people have made it so complicated down here, which is why I don't work for any other promotions. You will not see me unless it is a WWE extra spot or, you know, if somebody big came in. I will not involve myself with any other wrestling company. At least in this part of Mississippi. I don't know of anything really going on in North Mississippi, but I just kind of keep to myself because a lot of what I see just really just puts a bad taste in my mouth. And like I said, if I ever met Bill Watts, I would apologize for what has been done to this, to the leftover parts of his territory. The people want to believe. They want to get into it. But, you know, when you're trying to force feed them what you want instead of what they want, it's just a recipe for disaster.
Oh, boy. Okay. Woo. All right.
Well, Wes, how did wrestling royalty Nathan Crown do on August 4th at Coastal Clash against James Veal?
Nathan successfully defended his championship against James Veal. I was the special guest referee. It was a falls count anywhere, no disqualification match. They fought all over the building, and one of the best matches that I have seen in the state of Mississippi in all of my years. When you talk about two guys that not only do they have the ability to be wrestlers, but you also have two guys that stand out. And another problem that we have in Mississippi is you can't tell the wrestlers from the guys that work at Taco Bell in some of these promotions. But if you were to walk past James Veal or Nathan Crown on the street, you would look at them and you would say, that guy is something. He's a wrestler or he's a mixed martial artist. He's something. I mean, they're two guys that stand out. Is something special. And they, on August 4th, they had a special night, and definitely the best match of James Veal's short career. He's only been working for about 4 years. Nathan Crown did tell me that was one of his better matches, and he's been around for, close to 12 or 13 years. So very, very excellent match.
Wow, fantastic. It's always good to see a match where they get out of the ring and brawl in different areas of the venue. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think highlight to that match was Nathan Crown's entrance on a county fire truck. County fire truck drove Nathan to the ring with Nathan standing on top of the fire truck with the championship belt, which is really a sight to see.
Oh, well, now don't mention fire trucks or firemen to Sign Guy. He'll tell you about an incident later with some firemen that didn't turn out quite well.
No.
Yes. Oh, okay. Well, Wes, we just interviewed a wrestler named Prince Akhenaten, and he hails from Cairo, Egypt. To your knowledge, does wrestling royalty Nathan Crown, does he know Prince Akhenaten? Because it both sounds like they come from royal bloodlines.
I don't know who that is. I'm not familiar with that.
Prince Akhenaten?
Who is that? I'm not sure.
Okay, well, I will try to send you a link of Prince Akhenaten, and he's trying to sell some of his Prince Akhenaten Get Hooked T-shirts. You'll be very impressed.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with him. So yeah, please definitely send me something on him.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering. The wrestling royalty, Nathan Crown. He kind of has a familiar sounding link to Prince Akhenaten. Anything royalty? Yes.
Yeah,
okay,
I got it.
I'll try to send you a link, or a sign guy could. Okay, we'll both try. All right. Well, Wes, do you ever use WWE wrestling promos in your lesson plans at school?
Not in the lesson plans, but in my discipline, if you. I definitely can cut some promos. I can cut some really good promos. As a matter of fact, being a history teacher, it's kind of hard sometimes to get the kids to take history seriously, and so it can be pretty rough sometimes. And so I do have to cut promos from time to time.
Well, Wes, in your junior high, have you ever had a fight break out among kids? And the losing kid would suddenly hulk up and do the Hulkamania type thing and beat the other kid and come back to win.
No, because let me tell you, if a fight happens around West Adams, it's not going to last very long. Because I'm a fight breaker upper on my heart. Probably broke up double digits worth of fights last year. Fortunately, I've not had to this year because the word got out. Won't fight around Mr. Adams, because when I say I will dive in like a fat kid on a cupcake and I will handle my business and get them straight to the office or the correctional officer, that's a problem, in a lot of schools. There's not that
culture of respect. When I was growing up, you respected your teachers. You didn't fight around them. You didn't do that kind of stuff. And I don't know what's happened today. But somewhere along the way, the kids lost respect for the teachers, and they don't have problems just brawling in front of them. And it's really sad because it takes time away from classroom learning and instruction. And and times have changed. It's not like back in the old days when if you had an issue with somebody, you went to the parking lot or whatever, and you duped it out, and when it was done, it was done. Today, it doesn't work like that anymore. In this lawsuit happy and injury happy, world we live in, you can't just settle your differences man to man. It doesn't work like that anymore. And it's hard to get kids to understand that.
Yeah, I hear that. Even when I was in high school, if you had a beef against some kid, they would let you go to the gym and let you box the kid. They actually supplied the boxing gloves.
Yeah, but I know my school I went to, they didn't go that far, but I had heard of that before.
All right. Well, Wes, when you first broke into the WWE, did you get a welcome to the organization ceremonial knife-edge chop from Gail Kim?
I did not. Gail was gone by the time I got there. I only met Gail one time, and that was just passing in the airport in Tampa, Florida. And it was so brief that she probably, I don't know, she's met a lot of people in her career. She probably does not even remember. But she was gone and did not come back until after I was released. So I never did get that, unfortunately. I'm not sure.
Okay. All right. Did you ever have a chance to meet Booker T in a 7-Eleven like Goldust did?
No. I did meet Booker T in a Cracker Barrel, however.
A Cracker Barrel? Wow.
I was eating lunch. This would have been in 2006. I was in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and I was eating lunch and just randomly walks in Booker T and Sharmell. And this was about 6 months before I got hired by WWE, and I made sure to go speak to him and introduce myself and, you know, just show my respects, because Booker T is, in my opinion, one of the best talents, you know, from the 90s and 2000s era. I was a huge fan of Booker T's work. So I was able to meet him there, and briefly in WWE. It wasn't long after I got there that he left to go to TNA, so I didn't really get to work with him that much, but I always appreciated Booker T.
Oh, fantastic. That's good. I always liked his spin-a-rooney in the ring. Spin-a-rooney.
Oh, definitely. Nobody could do that like him.
Yes. Okay. Well, did you ever have a chance to travel to Romania with the WWE?
Not to Romania. The only international trips I made were to England and Scotland, and I did go on a tour of Canada. So that was the only three international tours that I made.
Scotland. Wow, very impressive. Did you have any of the native dishes of Scotland when you were there, like haggis?
I couldn't bring myself to eat the haggis. I watched other people eat the haggis. I did not.
Oh, my. Now, what was the reaction when they tasted haggis?
Well, what was funny was the ones that were eating it, the talent that was eating it had been there before. So they were eating it because they enjoyed it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they weren't like they were trying it. They knew what they were doing.
Well, you know, the Scotland has had a long time to perfect the haggis dish. You know, when they do it right, it's as common as like our hamburgers over here.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, Wes, if you pursued baseball, what position would you have wanted to play, and do you believe you could have made it to the AA level like Randy Savage did in the Cincinnati Reds organization?
That's a good question. First part, I was outfielder and first baseman because I am left-handed, so I did fairly decent at first base. Part of me looks back, and I stopped playing baseball in the 11th grade, mainly just because I went to a small private school, very political. I was on the wrong side of politics, and I really just, my heart was not into it. And at that point, the Attitude Era was starting to take off. Wrestling was getting hot. And the hotter wrestling gets, the more of my attention is focused towards wrestling. I would like to think that had I stuck with baseball a little bit longer, if I would have pursued it with the work effort that I pursued wrestling with, I think I might would have, you know, at least made it to college level, and who knows beyond that, what could have happened had I stuck with it. But, you know, that's one of those questions you can't really, or one of those things you can't really, you know, torture yourself about, because you can't change the past, and if you did, you know, no telling what the future would look like, so.
Very good, yes. Okay. Now, speaking of political views, and the role in high school today and colleges about politics. Have you heard of that wrestler from Kentucky called the Liberal Democrat?
Somebody did mention that to me. I think it was at the show in August. It hasn't been long ago. Somebody asked me about if I had heard of whoever was doing that gimmick. And I've heard of it, but I don't know who's doing it. You know, it's not something I would do on my shows, but, you know, if it's working other places, good for, you know, whoever it is that's doing it.
Well, I highly recommend you look up on YouTube videos the Liberal Democrat wrestler, and he's got very good ring persona, and he can really work the crowd. He comes to that area of Kentucky and West Virginia and that area in a Hillary Clinton t-shirt. He's very good. Very good. Okay. I hope you get a chance to look at those. All right. Well, Wes,
send me a link to him if you can, whenever you send the link to the chief, him
oh,
too.
Okay.
So I can take
Prince
a look.
Akhenaten. Okay. Okay. Prince Akhenaten and the Liberal Democrat. Okay. Now I've got my homework assignments. Okay. All right. Well, Wes, do you have a regular ring announcer at Power Slam Productions, or is that a duty you share with someone else?
It's kind of a we have a revolving ring announcer. We have a radio host named Dave Hughes that sometimes comes in and does it. Occasionally, I'll do it myself, or my wife, Kristen, she wrestles and does ring announcing too. You know, we kind of just alternate, you know, just kind of see who wants to do what. That's one thing I do love doing is ring announcing. So if the opportunity comes up for me to do that, I will ring announce. Sometimes, such as August 4th, you know, we split the show up. We had three matches, intermission, three matches, and I ring announced the first half, and my wife rang out the second half. So, to, you know, kind of change things up, make things a little bit different. So it's kind of a revolving door. But I'm really, really picky, you know, with the ring announcers. I feel that in addition to the referees, a ring announcer is a very, very underrated part of the wrestling experience. You got to have a professional ring announcer that has presence and has a voice and that can project and make a match sound important. And just announce it with that cadence, you know, that's a very underrated part. And I think that's something that's missing in a lot of, I know it's definitely missing in a lot of the independents in Mississippi, because they'll just throw anybody in the ring in announcer position and say, hey, read these cards, you know, give them some note cards, and they'll just read off the note cards. But that is a very, very important part of the presentation.
Yes, it is. It can set the mood of the crowd from the very beginning. Yes, he or she.
Absolutely. And some of the ring announcers, I'll tell you, Matt Stryker, when we were in Texas at the North Texas World Class event, Matt Stryker is a phenomenal ring announcer and host. Very phenomenal. You know, we've all seen the famous ring announcers through the years. You know, Justin Roberts was a great ring announcer. Howard Finkel, I think, is the gold standard. Gary Michael Capetta, one of my personal favorites, Tony Chimmel. You know, some of these guys, you know, those are wrestling ring announcers. You know, and you know, a lot of, you know, potential ring announcers or people who are interested in that, you know, should definitely watch tapes of those ring announcers and just practice and project and, you know, just make it stand out.
Yeah. See, even get in a soundproof room and try your voice out. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and that doesn't just go, you know, for ring announcers, but managers, wrestlers, I mean, promos all the time in the shower, in the car. I mean, you know, just wherever you can. I mean, practice makes perfect, you know, and I think that's one thing that, you know, gets overlooked is just the constant practice. I mean, it's just something you have to continue to do in order to be, you know, be great at something. You have to continuously practice.
Yep, I agree with that. Yep. All right. Well, Wes, right before we came on, I was going over your YouTube video entitled Former WWE Official and Luke Gallows, in parentheses, DOC, Sends Wrestling Fans a Message. My first question is, can you describe what the Bullet Club is, and did Luke Gallows belong to this club?
Bullet Club, I'll be honest with you, I don't follow New Japan very much. Today, where I'm at this point with me in wrestling, I mostly watch and listen to shoot interviews, older stuff, try to rehash old booking ideas. I don't watch a lot of new stuff. Basically, what I get from the Bullet Club is it's a group of young, hungry talent grouped together and just kicking butt all over Japan. And now they're bringing that to the United States. Luke Gallows was a member of the Bullet Club, him and Carl Anderson, before coming back to WWE. At the point that I did the interview with Doc, the one that you're mentioning, he was about to leave TNA and go to Japan to begin working, if I recall correctly. That was right before he went to Japan. This was after TNA. This is right before he started Japan. So he wasn't yet there wasn't a Bullet Club just yet. That would have been 2013.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe it has something to do with the Bullet Train in Japan. The Bullet Train.
I'm not sure. It possibly could have. I'm not sure what the inspiration for the name is. But, you know, I tell you, the Bullet Club, it's over, man. I mean, when you're selling T-shirts in Hot Topic in Gulfport, Mississippi, you're over, man. They have Bullet Club T-shirts in our Hot Topic and, you know, Young Buck and Cody Rhodes and Kenny Omega shirts. And it's just, man, it's fantastic. You know, it's just good for those guys. So good. Good for the business.
Do you ever see a day when the Turnbuckle Turmoil radio show will go over big in Gulfport, Mississippi? Their T-shirts.
I would hope so.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Wes, one final question before I turn it over to Sign Guy. Has your wife, Christian, ever been in a steel cage match?
She has not. I have not been in a steel cage match myself. Neither one of us have.
Wow, okay, all right. Has your wife held any tag team championship gold?
No, no championships. No titles just yet, but still early.
Okay, all right, very good. All right. Well, I'll try to send you that link to the Liberal Democrats and Prince Akhenaten, and at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Sign Guy.
Thank you so much
for your effort of being a teacher. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, QT. Well, Wes, you worked for WWE for a while, and, of course, the very top of the food chain there is Vince McMahon. For someone like yourself that was a referee there and worked there for a handful of years, if someone at your level were to have ideas for the show, if you had concerns at all, how accessible was Vince McMahon to someone like yourself?
To me, not so much accessible. And really not just for me, but really for any of the referees. Any concerns that we may have, we would have either taken, you know, if it was about a match, we would have taken it to a producer such as Arn Anderson, Dean Malenko, Steamboat, or Finley, whoever the agents were at the time. If it was a talent relations issue, we would have went to John Laurinaitis or Mark Carano or whoever was working in the talent department at the time, Mike Boutier, Tommy Dreamer. So that would be who we would report to. You know, we wouldn't go directly to Vince. If it was an idea, like for myself, I had several creative ideas. I would write a pitch and I would email it directly to the creative team, to Michael Hayes or Bruce Pritchard, or I would type it up into a treatment and just hand it to them. So there was different ways to go about that. Now the talent, on the other hand, you know, the talent had more of an open door to Vince, especially the upper card talent. If they had a concern, Cena, Orton, you know, they could just go directly to Vince with that. But for, you know, referee or somebody like me, you know, it would be you'd have a hierarchy. You know, you would go to, you know, and me personally, before not that I ever had really had any problems, I would go to one of the senior referees. I'll never forget one of the only times I ever met one-on-one with Vince. Well, really, it was three. It was kind of a little group thing, but I'll get that in a second. But I was working an ECW live show, and it was a Halloween show. And the match was Tommy Dreamer versus Nunzio, and it was a Halloween rules match. And Barry Windham was the producer for the match. And when I saw the run sheet, and it had Halloween rules or Halloween hygiene, something like that. It's on YouTube and it's on WWE Network. And it's freaking hilarious because that's the match where Tommy Dreamer dresses up as Paul Heyman. It's phenomenal. Got to check that out. I looked at the run sheet and I had no idea what a Halloween hijinks match was, or Halloween rules. And I've been watching WWE since, you know, I was 4 or 5 years old. I had seen about every type of match there was, except that one. And I went to Charles Robinson and Jimmy Corderas and Mickey J. They were the senior referees. And I said, hey, what is the Halloween hijinks match? And they're like, I don't know. You need to go talk to Barry. He's the producer. So I go find Barry Windham, and I said, hey, Barry, I said, can I talk to you for a second? He's like, yeah, kid, what's up? And I said, I see I got the match, Dreamer and Nunzio. My question is, what is a Halloween hardcore match or a Halloween hijinks match, whatever it was? And Barry, he looked at me and turned his head, and he goes, I don't know, kid. Come on, we're going to go find out. And Barry... And I followed Barry, and he went straight to Vince's office, and he said, hey, Vince, got a question. And Vince goes, what is it, pal? And, hey, what is a Halloween hijinks match? And he goes, well, it's basically going to be a hardcore match, but they're going to be wearing costumes. And we were like, okay. He said, Falls Count Anywhere. Have fun with it. And we were like, yes, sir. And that was it. So that was one of my few one-on-one meetings with Vince.
Well, we have a few minutes left in the show today. I want to give that time to you. If there's anything you'd like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything and everything you have, social medias, upcoming appearances, merchandise, your favorite tea shop, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
Well, thank you. Just support independent wrestling. I mean, that's all I can really say. You know, if you're in the Mississippi area, Palestine Productions is promoting Real Warfare December 1st in Gulfport, Mississippi. You can check us out on Palestine Productions on Facebook, also our YouTube channel. You can find me directly on Facebook, Wes Adams. Just send me a link or message or request, and glad to great. Out with anybody, answer any questions.
Well, Wes Adams, it's been a pleasure having you on the show today. I appreciate it greatly. And best of luck as you continue onward with your career, and hopefully we'll get to do this again sometime.
I hope so. Thank y'all for having me.
All right, fans, get out there, support your local independent professional wrestling. Find yourself a show near you. Go out, check it out, buy some merchandise, support the wrestlers and what they do.
We'll be back with you Sunday afternoon. Drake Evans out of the great state of New York is our guest. Should be a great show with him. And we will talk to you then.